Okay, here we are. We are back. Let's see here. The ending time of the executive session, we just have a couple extra minutes beyond, is we're reconvening at 1:43. So I'd like to call the regular regular meeting back to order. And I think that the commission wants to discuss then the proposed marina rates and the budget at this time. And so I'll pass the baton over to
Tom. That little thing. Uh-huh, yep. This could be a better one. I think each of us individually and as a group have struggled with the whole question of the mortgage rates and the importance of not closing the doors to water access for all the people that live in this area. And we do know, because we went back and looked at our tenant listings and waiting lists, that in fact our marina is serving the North Kitsap area primarily, and as opposed to how it was 10 years ago when the majority were from elsewhere, from all over. And so I think that's been good. And we have been very concerned that we not raise the rates too steeply, rich man's sport, and all of that kind of thing. And it's particularly intense because we're looking ahead and seeing at least a recession coming. And that will bring a level of chaos, potentially, to the economy. And we've got to keep that in our heads while we think about any sort of development on the port property. And so that we don't get in the center of something and get stuck. And so that we are really mindful about what costs are passed on to our port residents, as opposed to potential businesses. And we're aware that the work that we've done to really analyze the rates and increases, and because we started at like close to the bottom of all the marinas in the entire region 5 years ago, and had to, over 3 years, hike the rates up enough that we could manage to stay in business, not this year, but in 10 to 15 years when we're looking at marina replacement costs and significant operational requirements. And I think I'm satisfied that we've gotten to a good place. I know other marinas, particularly in Washington State, are struggling. Some are trying to figure out whether they can even keep, how do you keep the doors open on a marina?
Kind of like the, right.
The gates. And John Wayne Marina is trying to sell itself to somebody besides, and no, there are no takers. Mm-hmm. And it's not a smart business to be in at this point. And I think each of us is committed individually and as a group to keeping our marina park, our services, access to the water. That's what that all means, is access to the water. With a priority on how do we get more and more people able to come down and touch the water that makes this place so special. So having said that, I think are at a good place with a decision around the rate structure.
Yes.
And I'm shut up. Right.
Great. That's excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. I think you basically covered it all. I don't think I should add anything to that. Thank you.
And we did concur. We feel that keeping the rates as the estimated as the as our average, which is what the research has shown, is the correct thing for the Port Commission to do, and we were we're in agreement, I think, on that. And I don't have any further. At this point, we do have action items that are related to the budget at hand. So we've got five action items that I think what we'll do is, Greg, do you want to just briefly go over the action item A? So.
Before we start that,
yes.
I just want to comment that we've had several meetings, open meetings, advertised meetings, inviting, really wanting people to bring their questions and concerns about the budget. And
like 2 months.
Yeah. We've been trying to gather reaction.
Good point. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. I think we've got, we have action items in five separate categories with a separate resolution for each. So I think what I'd do is entertain a motion then on action item A regarding the adoption of the 2023 budget.
I move that we approve resolution 2022-11-16-01 to adopt the 2023 budget.
I'll second that.
Very good. And then I think what we'll do is, Greg, do you want to just go over that just real quickly, and then we'll have our vote on it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the so the proposed budget is 2022 is the baseline for 2023. And then we looked at the various revenues and expense line items, and they've been adjusted to reflect trends that we're currently experiencing. The port is projecting operating revenue about $3.368 million, which is about 4% increase, and operating expenses of $2.87, which is also 4% increase over 2022. The net income under this draft version would be $28,727, which also includes depreciation and amortization of nearly $469,000. So the total projected cash inflow would be just under $474,000, right, the way it currently stands for this budget. We will be spending a substantial amount of that money on capital investments, however. So we won't see on the balance sheet a significant increase in our cash reserves, even though our long-term goal and even our immediate term is to build our cash reserves. So, but just as a note, so, and people will see that on the balance sheet if they are tracking. The P&L will look good, and then the balance sheet will still look good, but it just, you'll see that we won't have a growth like we've had over the past 4 years of $500,000 a year.
Right.
To arrive where we are. So revenue is usually broken down in direct and non-direct revenue. Direct revenue includes operating revenue, and non-direct includes property tax receipts, grants, interest income, and leasehold excise tax. Turning to the revenues, permanent mortgage revenue should increase with the rate increases since occupancy has stayed at 100% for many years. The rates reflect an effort to stay close to the overall average rate for each slip size related to a survey that we've done collecting data, and this year we had 52 marinas that we were able to get the data for. Current rates are based on the previous year's average rates because we don't have the data for next year when we make these recommendations to the commission for you to go on. Our goal, which was established 3 years ago, was to reach the average rate for all marinas surveyed over 3 years of steady rate adjustments. Since we base the next year's rates on the previous year's mortgage rates, we are always trailing the actual average for the mortgage rate. So our rates should always, unless somebody was decreasing rates across the market, our rates will always be a little bit below the average.
All right.
But this year they would stay close to what we project the average. Mm-hmm. We have a wait list that continues to remain strong. And this year we had 10 out of the 252 permanent mortgage slips, or about 4% turnover. So we are having some turnover in our mortgage. People aren't necessarily completely sitting on these because they're so inexpensive. So we were pulled off the wait list this year. The wait list continues to backfill with new additions. And information from BST Associates, which is Paul Sorensen, who we had come and speak at a public meeting for the commission and to the benefit of the public about the market, and Wagner's, indicates there is more demand than supply throughout the Puget Sound for mortgage. And virtually all marinas have wait lists. The guest mortgage has grown and should remain strong. We are continuing to build guest mortgage demand from yacht clubs. And we hope to expand to Canadian clubs more so now that the pandemic seems to be sunsetting and the borders opened up. Mm-hmm. Direct sales and additional approaches to market the port will be pursued through the coming year. We're concerned, though, the effect the price increases and volatility has for fuel, which in turn affects a lot of the power boaters. But again, we can't really project that. But the volatility, and when you start, you know, we had a long time where we had many years where the fuel costs were so inexpensive that I think it really gave not a real view of what the market really should have been for the cost of fuel. Mm-hmm. Seasonal mortgage. So seasonal mortgage has grown steadily, and we see this trend continuing through the next 2 to 3 years before it will likely plateau. Seasonal mortgage occupancy is also dependent on selling directly to boaters. We're going to increase our efforts in that area. Utilities are being closely monitored, and we seek to recover those costs. I know that Tori, our maintenance manager, and Stacy and the staff have gone over pretty thoroughly over utilities to look if there's utilities that we are not recovering, and we have some room for improvement there, we think. Real estate and lease revenue should stay relatively flat, but there will be increases due to CPI adjustments where applicable. You know, property taxes are will increase 1%, but we're capped due to legislation. And property taxes really are really modest for this port district. They run a little over $220,000 a year as compared to some ports, which might have a couple million, just because their tax base is extensive. And the port district, geographically, might run throughout the whole county. Parking is challenging to predict. We expect parking revenue to strengthen as it has been this year. It has nearly reached or is exceeding maybe pre-pandemic levels. Also, Kitsap Transit is kicking off a marketing campaign to increase ridership. We treat fuel like its own line of business, and prices and costs have been prone to such volatility, with prices hitting record highs. This volatility has had a distinct dampening effect on demand in boating, especially after this long period of record low prices. Fuel prices have increased significantly, so the revenues have been increased, but so have the costs of goods sold for the fuel. This line of business could move the gross revenue numbers up or down, but will have little effect on improving profitability. If prices remain too high, it will definitely decrease guest mortgage revenue and profit. So turning to expenses, salaries and wages, budget reflects a 5% adjustment across the board for all employees. The ports and agencies are adjusting by CPI, which was 10.1% in June. Given the aggressive interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, we believe we are already in a recession. Recessions are formally defined only in retrospect, but it seems to have an effect on consumer demand for discretionary spending, which boating falls under. If cost of living does not come down, we will look at adjustments in the coming year. However, permanent increases using current CPI do not seem justified at this time. Having said that, we base compensation on market data and performance. We have a goal of retaining staff and investing in them.
Staffing turnover is extremely expensive. It's time-consuming and incredibly challenging to backfill with new qualified employees. And competition for qualified staff has become even more difficult in the public sector, as well as having to compete with private sector companies. Employee medical is increasing at an estimated rate of 5 to 10%. We budgeted 7.5% for this coming year. Pension expense. So the pension contribution requirements issued by the state of Washington have started to vary from year to year. We used to keep them pretty steady, actually, but now we're seeing a little bit more change, a little bit more volatility there. Individual employee contributions are currently at 6.36%, and employer contributions have increased from 10.25% to 10.39% currently. And I think 4 years ago it was over, well over 12%. So it reduced down quite a bit, and now it just seems to hover. And they're doing, I think, more annual analytics on what it takes to fund that pension fund. So training and educational opportunities will include updating our staff on the marina management software, and we will be researching other alternatives for accounting software. We don't anticipate rolling them out this coming year, but we're going to conduct our due diligence. Under IT, you know, we have covered what we think our needs are for hardware, software, workstations, and laptops for the coming year, and are not expecting any significant changes in 2023. We contract with Olympic Educational Service District to help support those services, and we've done pretty close to a formal audit of just about everything at this point, but there's still more we can do, and we probably will end up doing kind of going through a process so that we go through, like the SAO has now an IT department, an audit department, so we'll make sure that we're robust, but we think we're pretty insulated in terms of cybersecurity and the like. Under utilities, staff's put a lot of effort into tracking our utility costs. We are putting in place measures to ensure we maximize cost recovery. We're not allowed to make money on utilities by law, but we can recover those costs. Utilities are expected to increase slightly, and we budgeted a 5% increase. Excise taxes, no changes are expected. I think at this point. And then, you know, credit card charges, you know, we believe that we're paying pretty high fees. Audit trainer, our controller, and finance director, she's already identified this as an area of concern. We believe we can likely reduce credit card charges annually. However, we need to integrate these changes with our business processes, our customers, banking, and coordinate with Kitsap County since they serve as our treasurer. Cash reserves. So our cash reserves in January of 2019 were $831,000. They currently stand at just over $2.5 million, and we hope to exceed $2.7 million or better by the end of 2022. It just depends whether we can claw back some additional funding from the Department of Revenue and then build more contributions for November and December to our cash. So if we achieve the goal, though, we're close to growing our reserves by $2 million over the past 4 years, which would align with about 500,000 annual average contributions to our savings or our reserves. We take our responsibility as fiduciaries of the public trust seriously, and we hope these results instill confidence that we can be reliable stewards. We're trying to build our annual savings contributions to over $1 million annually to fund our long-term costs for replacement of our capital assets. However, we will have operating expenses and capital repair and replacement ongoing, and that will be a real challenge. Staff have built a cash flow model that currently goes out 30 years, and I want to recognize Audra and Stacy's efforts to do that. I think that's a high water mark for almost any port to be able to start going down that road. Using that model and assumptions built into that model, we can look ahead and see we have a shortfall to fund the replacement of our capital assets in about 10 to 15 years, depending on the life and cost of these assets. We have a limited tax general obligation debt payment of a little over $85,000. I believe coming up, maybe I might be overstating that actually, but pretty close to $80,000. The primary lines of business that we're focusing on are the marina, economic development and existing lines of business such as parking and fuel, and projects that support our responsibility as a transportation hub. In summary, first and foremost, we always prioritize life safety and property safety. Secondly, we maintain continuity of operations. And third, and very importantly, we create new economic opportunities. And I will talk about the capital budget after, if there's any questions about
the
operating budget.
Excellent. Okay, thank you, Greg, very much for that summary. Awesome. Okay, so we have a discussion, and we have any discussion items. I think we have a motion, and shall we take a vote on the budget? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Let's see. So now we have action item B relating to the capital budget.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 2022-11-1602 to adopt the 2023 capital budget.
I second that motion.
Very good. And Greg, do you want to go over that capital budget with us real quick?
Sure. So the capital budget is, we have it, we embedded actually also in the comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements. So that's the kind of our guiding document. And we updated that for a capital, and we call it capital recreational plan. We refer to the recreational plan too because that's embedded in our capital plan. And you're required, if you want to apply for certain grants at the state, you have to refer to it formally as a recreational plan as well. So this coming year, I think some of the focus is really, we have to do a lot of due diligence in terms of our looking at alternatives for the port, for all sorts of different lines of business. But a lot of this is really focused on execution of, we received three grants from the Recreation and Conservation Office, and they were related really to the middle replacement of the middle bathroom and increasing our capacity on the guest moorage. So you'll see, but we start off too, what we have to do is, in order to do all this work, we're gonna have to submit for a programmatic permit with the Army Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And that should, and so part of that due diligence is we wanna capture under that application everything that we might want to do at all within the Port of Kingston for any in-water work or shoreline work for that matter. So that's going to be undergoing, and that includes dredge permitting, which is the first item. So we know that after the last dredge, we've been monitoring the resedimentation, which has been very modest. I think we're looking at 300 or 400 cubic yards annually, as opposed to tens of thousands or thousands even. So it's really modest. And so we see after a number of years, after monitoring that through bathymetric surveys, we're looking good. Doesn't mean we don't need to do maintenance dredging. 6 inches or a foot of extra water under a boat makes a big difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna put some effort into the dredge permitting. We're gonna replace the sail float. And the sail float services Sail Kingston Cove, and that's not eligible under the grants that we received. So we'll fund that out of our cash reserves. Bless you. And then under RCO transient floats, there's the $614,000 line item. But what I want, so that's $614,000, and then the middle bathroom is $328,000. So you combine these, but we have our out of pocket will be about $471,000. And so it was almost like well over $900,000 in total grants that we received. But out of that, we're going to have maybe about $470,000 out of pocket. We're also going to be looking at further development of the properties and doing our due diligence for uplands development, of potential, expanding the park as well as doing some commercial development. And then we also want to pursue reestablishing with the Department of Natural Resources our port management agreement. We need to re-up on that, and as part of that, they're going to require us to survey the submerged lands. So the state owns some of the lands that are off of the port. We would actually like to, my recommendation is to, expand that footprint so that we proactively can manage and enforce all of the use of the submerged lands in Apple Tree Cove, mm-hmm. and also down along North Beach. The reason being is that the state, they have, I don't know how many miles to manage. If we have it under our port management agreement, then we can enforce vessels that are mooring there and how long they've been mooring there. Like, for example, and avoid the risks of derelict vessels. Mm-hmm. So we, unfortunately, like that tug, which ended up breaking free and running aground after almost 3 years, they were in the state-managed property, and they're outside of our purview.
Yeah.
Even though we worked really closely with all of the agencies and, fortunately came out with no loss of life and, the tug was just lost, a complete mm-hmm. loss. But if we can expand our port management agreement, that would be preferable. Mm-hmm. So that's going to take some money and effort to do that. And then we're spending some money on looking at permitting and construction on the Washington Boulevard properties. And then we have it listed as piling replacement. It'll be rolled into the overall programmatic permit.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really including a monetary value, but it's something that has to be addressed. And then, we have problems with our windows, and we're looking at replacing those this coming year in the administrative office. We're also looking at whether we want to acquire, but we're proposing to acquire a boat and boat motor as a backup. We are actually the kind of the backup response for Kitsap Transit in the event they have a fuel spill or something happens.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at also security system for the port. We've been very fortunate compared to most other ports and municipalities in terms of the level of crime that they've experienced compared to us, but we still have had some events. And our existing security system is, not good enough, and it's pretty aged too. So we're looking at updating the existing security system. If we feel that really is working well for us, we may go to in 2024, do the full meal deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, if you start having a threat, you just simply have to respond in the moment immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that may mean instead of doing, just getting cameras and putting security on it, which are a deterrent, of actually maybe we have to hire staff instead, or mm-hmm. do some contract with someone. So it's one of those things we just have to monitor on point. In the fuel dock, we know that those dispensers are really old, almost impossible to get parts for them anymore, and to replace them is pretty much the only option going forward. So what we're proposing is replacing one of the fuel dispensers for this coming year, and then the other one for the next year. And then in the tenant offices, we were going to go and put those in for next year, and you can kind of see that we've deferred that to 2024. What we're going to do is in the middle restrooms, what we're going to try to do is we're going to do a design build on those middle restrooms, and we're going to roll in showers probably into the middle restrooms, at least have that availability. They can be a problem just to have them out and just have open public access. I don't think that's going to be viable for us given the criminal activity that we've had, but we'll make them available so that if we do have to do a refit of the administrative office of showers for the boaters,
mm-hmm.
And for visitors, then we have some in place. So the remaining amount of these projects, you can look through them. Those are really projected out through 2024 and 2027, and then I just want to make sure that I reiterate that on our plan. So we are receiving in grant money $421,250 out of the boating facilities program from the state of Washington's Recreation Conservation Office. We're also receiving under a boating infrastructure grant, a tier one grant, $73,800. And under the RCO grant program under the aquatic lands and enhancement account, we're receiving $172,200. So our capital burden, if we take that money out, is $471,350. So it's very close to our cash inflow
mm-hmm.
that I referred to earlier.
Yeah.
So it isn't, like I said, again, you won't see the balance sheet really going up like you have in the previous 4 years.
Yeah.
But it's, it's still being reinvested in the port.
Yeah, right.
So again, capital program is focused on repair and maintenance of the marina, replacement of the middle bathroom in Mike Wallace Park, development of guest moorage, economic development, emphasizing new construction in the tent pad area along Washington Boulevard and examining that opportunity, conducting due diligence related to all economic development opportunities, and then expanding our life cycle asset management approach to capital planning and our cash flow model. You know, we've been trying to cap our capital expenditures around $200,000, and so we're departing from that. But we think that we, you know, given that we had real success with the RCO for, you know, getting that grant money, that's the justification. I'm happy to answer any questions.
There's two different segments of funds that are going to bathroom facilities. One to the construction, $328,000, and then the other is the tenant restrooms, immediate upgrades of $15,000 the following year. Mm-hmm. Can you just explain what's the difference?
So the tenant, we did not apply for any money yet for the tenant restroom, which is in the administrative office.
Yeah.
We applied only to replace the middle restroom. And what we did was we commingled the floats, and then we were trying to be honest with RCO. What we said was there's these different user groups, and all the grant programs have different user groups. So the middle restroom and the floats are kind of commingled get grant money.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The tenant restroom will be out of our operating reserves, our cash reserves, the following year.
Okay.
First get that in place
before we
start carrying into anything in the administrative office.
Right,
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm good.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, Greg. Okay, we have a motion and a second for the capital budget. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay, moving right along, we have item C, which is adopt the 2023 rate schedule.
I move that we approve resolution number 2022-11-1603 to adopt the 2023 rate schedule for the marina.
Second that.
Very good. We've kind of gone through this, but do you want to just real quickly go over that, Greg? Sorry.
One more time for good of the order. So we embarked on a plan to adjust our rates to fair market value, and with the idea that we were going to reinvest that money in the port in order to get us to a point where we're financially sustainable.
Yeah.
So we've had really aggressive rate increases. What we did was I have not really articulated, I don't express these as percentages, because the percentages will, you know, if you 100% of nothing is nothing, but, you know, 10% of the top of the end is a really significant increase. But we just said, hey, we want to try to see if we can go to the average rate. And then every year, we've looked at our wait lists and as really one of our key benchmarks to see if there's turnover on the wait list or if we eliminate the wait list and we start seeing vacancy in the marina. So we're at the point you kind of want to keep 100% occupancy if you can, or just walk that threshold. So we're now at the pretty close, just below the average rate, and this rate adjustment is in absolute value terms trying to maintain the average rate for each slip size amongst the 52 marinas that we surveyed. So it's still going to be some significant increases. It varies as a percentage by slip size, so I didn't break it down by percentages. I just look at what's the competitive rate. So when I call a marina, I ask them, they give me it's going to be $250. They don't say it's going to be 2% over last year. So what we do is we just look at the absolute values, and then that's where we've pegged ourselves. And so this is a recommendation just to adjust the rates to the average rate for based on last year's marina rates.
Excellent. Okay, we have a motion and second, and all in favor of the motion, number C?
Aye.
Excellent. Okay. Let's see. Okay, now we're on to item D. We're getting there, people. proposal to adopt a comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 2022-11-16-04 to adopt the comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements.
I second that motion.
Very good. Greg, do you want to go over that with
us? Sure.
Thank you.
So the comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements is required by law for us to have in place in order to be able to take action on all these items. There's different strategies among some of the ports, but most of the ports, what you try to do is make sure that the comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements includes just about anything, all of your assets you have in your portfolio. You only usually really start adjusting the scheme very much in terms of looking at the capital plan, which is embedded in the document at the end. And so all this is, the only real changes is usually the opening narrative to the in the executive summary,
right,
and then the capital plan. We did adjust this comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements to make sure that we included any potential use for any port property at this point. So you'll see on, near the very back of the document, there's a list of all the potential uses. So it could be an RV park, you have the marina, you have dry stack storage, you have boutique hotel, you have all these various uses. Yeah. All those uses pretty much align with what our zoning is currently. We have applied with the county to rezone what's referred to as the Top and Hill property. So all the property would be zoned the same, which is urban village center.
Yeah.
We were successful in rezoning the property, which is commonly referred to as the tent pad, from neighborhood commercial to urban village center. And that just opens up the possibilities and opportunities for that property. But this document is kind of our guiding document. And what we do is we just updated the capital plan, and I just ran through exactly what the capital plan, which is embedded in it.
Excellent.
And I think the overall theme for what we're trying to do is, one, we've been trying to maintain, we want things to be stable. We want stability, and then we also have to have growth. Those are the two things that the port that we have to go after. So what this reflects is both of those items. We've been trying to maintain stability in the port. I'm almost obsessive about any downside risk. So we don't like litigation. We don't like derelict vessels. We follow the rules, we try to be transparent. We've had a lot of meetings. This stuff, so
yes,
it's probably too old for you guys. Mm-hmm. But anybody that comes in, they're going to hear the same consistent message.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have to have growth. We know that we have to grow our way out of this. We know we can't tax our way out of anything, and we know that we can't grant our way out of it. But we will entertain those, any and all funding sources and vehicles that could ultimately help carry that burden forward.
Yeah, this is great.
And I know, and I think this is a great document in many ways, because there's a lot of the history, and it kind of goes through the whole asset list of what we have, kind of what they're used for. Then it also has that list of all the potential lines of business that we could pursue. Get that to Lynn. She's in the black.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
If there's any questions about it, I know that the commission, you're very familiar with it. Also, we meet every Tuesday morning at 8:30 to 10 o'clock. If you review the comprehensive scheme improvements or you have questions, you can also attend those meetings, or you can just send them, people can just send them to me, and then I share them with the Port Commission.
I don't think so.
That way we avoid a Open Public Meetings Act violation.
Yeah.
Or Chris Williams, our administrative services manager, she'll keep me honest.
So I do want to comment that Appendix B, the options and opportunities,
yeah,
these are all the things that have been talked about.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily the menu of what's going to happen.
No.
Good point.
It's
yes.
A menu.
Right. Yeah.
And it is a menu, but if you don't put it in, it precludes you from even talking about it.
I think to the extent that we want everyone in our community to understand what's the tunnel we're looking down.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the stuff on the shelves, but you know it's not
necessary. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I think what we've talked about is our charge as staff for this coming year is to explore those alternatives, present the pros and cons to the commission, and then you decide and weigh amongst yourselves and with the public, you know, mm-hmm. in the community, what you want to prioritize and what you want to pursue.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Greg, very much.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion and second for the adoption of the Comprehensive Scheme of Harbor Improvements. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, excellent. And now, in the very back of this packet, I think, is the system revenue. And that is item E for the to adopt the 2023 tax levy. I would entertain a motion to...
I move that we... adopt. Thank you. Resolution number 2022-11-1605 to adopt the 2023 tax levy.
I second that.
Okay, excellent. And Greg,
so
are you?
What I would
look at?
Yep. So there's a slight change to this. This is a document that we received from the county, and I was just talking to Audra. So I apologize because I was in the review committee for the planning facilities program with the state all morning reviewing all the proposals. So the estimated total levy amount will actually be $227,979.
Oh, okay.
The levy rate actually reduces from 13.9 cents per $1,000 of property tax goes down to 12 cents, just over 12 cents per $1,000,
okay.
About 0.12209. I'll send this out and we'll adopt this and we'll roll it into the packet so that
gotcha.
People see it.
Okay.
You'll see that because the IMIN initiative, capping it at 1%, unless there's some action taken ultimately, you just keep seeing that it's called the millage rate. So it's our tax rate per $1,000 of property tax value. You'll keep seeing that reducing and going down, which is what we have over the years.
Yeah.
But because the
property values
keep improving, you see that we increased incrementally. It's what was it, $4,000, $3,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't do a tremendous amount, but it does increase every year the total revenue into the port. So I think we were around $205,000, I think, 4 years ago. Now we're $228,000 almost for next year. So I will get you a revised version of this, but the total estimated tax levy amount will be $227,979 for next year. And we'll adjust the budget accordingly.
Okay, all right.
I apologize for that.
I'd like to point out, because there really isn't a place that shows this, that the property tax revenue is like 7% of the operating revenue. And we have worked very hard to not raise that. And it's an important piece of our revenue stream, but it's not where the majority of it comes from.
Yeah.
And I have heard people say, oh, you're doing things to the marina that cost all of us. well, actually, they really cost the parkers and, you know, the boat tenants, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Much
yeah.
more than.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I think it's good to point out in real numbers that what an average home, let's say a home that's worth approximately $300,000, so just go with that number, pays approximately $90 in property taxes to the port per year. Per year. So that just gives you an idea of how much is paid into the port per property.
Mm-hmm. And given that housing values have gone up, maybe it's $250, but it's still a pretty small contribution
right.
to the community.
And the maximum that we're allowed is 45 cents.
Right.
So sometimes when you, they refer to it as the millage rate, sometimes when you get your tax and you look at it, you can see, like, for example, the Park District, they can charge 75 cents per $1,000. Ports can only charge 45 cents per thousand. And there's, in the life of a port, you can only do, you can only pass two adjustments, which are called industrial development districts, where you can go and tax the people in the port district. And then you're done. That's the for the once you exercise those two, you can't. There's no other tax it could ever be. So the port, we established the IDD last year in the 104-year history of the port. They actually have to establish that, so that if you ever wanted to execute it, sometimes people they you know commissions will say, hey, how come we don't have that established? Because let's say there was let's say that tug broke loose and sank right in the navigational channel into the marina. Well, we might say, hey, we don't if we didn't have the cash flow to be able to get rid of the tug, even though we could get reimbursed maybe from the state, and at least in part, we need that cash. And they could say, okay, we're passing this, but you don't get taxed even then until the next year. It just you can't collect the taxes, but at least it creates a cash flow for the port. A lot, most of the time, though, the IDD or the taxes, if you do pass those, they go towards reinvesting in economic development. And so usually ports look at it as, hey, we're going to redevelop and create economic opportunity, job creation, and preserve public access. And then also most ports include environmental stewardship as part of their mission, every port that I know of anyway. So.
Excellent.
But I don't think that we're talking about invoking the IDD at this point.
No.
There was some conversation about it,
yeah.
but we decided.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Too much economic uncertainty.
Yeah.
Too much that's not known.
Yeah. Okay, we have a motion and a second for approval adoption of the 2023 tax levy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Where's my next page here? Okay. Okay, we are now. Discussion items.
We already did that.
Okay. maybe we already went through that. So that's fine. Financial report, item 8.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Audra Trainer. I'm the controller at the port. So nice to meet you and see you. So I first wanted to go over the balance sheet. We now include the balance sheet both in summarized and a detailed version for the commission and whoever wants to see it. I think it's important that that is transparent, and it's something that we've done a lot of work to clean up and present to you. The cash and equivalents. So the balance from the end of the month, October, is $2.53 million. We have total debt of $729,500 from the LTGO bond, and our cash balance, given all debt, is $1.03 million. From the end of 2021 to the end of October, we have grown our cash balance $382,422. I wanted to point out as well, Greg mentioned this, and I think it's really important to show, you know, how our reserves are growing year to year. In 2018, at the end of 2018, the cash balance was $831,000. That did not include the debt of $937,000. So we were actually did not even have enough cash. We had more debt than we had reserves at the end of that year. In 2019, we were able to grow our cash reserves by $848,103. That's a very significant growth, and that was, of course, prior to COVID. But some of the business practices, the discussion of the importance of the marina rates, mm-hmm. To increase those, that is what that's about. We would not be able to sustain the marina, the port, if we didn't have our due diligence and you know, make these important business decisions. Then we come to 2020, and we did grow. It was by a smaller amount. It was $266,416, and that also included COVID. So we, you know, took a big hit on parking, you know, mortgage, a lot of things in that. For 2021, we grew our cash reserves by $204,742. And now here at this point in the year, as I mentioned, it's $382,422. What Greg had mentioned, our goal is to increase it by $1 million per year. So we have a long way to go to reach that. There's also the importance of having enough reserves on hand to handle any emergencies, potential lawsuits, any kind of environmental things, and as well as just being able to run your operations. Mm-hmm. So that is why I think it's very important to keep our eye on that and to, in order to maintain financial stability. That's also a big thing that the state auditors are looking at now. It used to not be much of a focus, but seeing how many organizations aren't planning ahead for future, you know, maintaining our assets, that's gonna be a big lift for us. We know we can't do it on our current lines of business alone.
Yep.
That's what we mentioned growth. So it's, you know, having these brainstorms, how can we get more revenue streams in? What else can we do? Growth is going to be that, as well as, you know, the stability of maintaining our expenses and our current lines mm-hmm. of business and offering, you know, value to not only the current tenants, but the Kingston members, community members, and growing the economy, you mm-hmm. know, kind of with everybody. It affects the whole city, unincorporated?
Town.
Okay. Kingston.
Labeled
yeah.
a town.
Okay, so I just wanted to point that out, and we are doing a lot of analysis that hasn't been shared with too many, but it's, you know, looking at the lines of business. It is determining when the replacement is going to happen on specific assets and how much that will be, so when we need that cash flow to be available. And we're going to have to use all of our resources, and that is, you know, grants, it's you know, possible IDD, not that we're discussing it in any formal way, but that's another way we can do it. Lines of credit, municipal loans. Currently, we're going through a state audit, super fun. I've been through a lot of audits in my life, but not for a port. And so, but it's going really well. They're auditing 2019, 2020, and 2021. So, I have the great responsibility of explaining what happened before I got here, but it's okay. It is going really good, though. And it's funny because one of the questions right out of the gate was the financial stability. What are you doing to ensure that you will be in business in 5 years? Well, luckily, we've done a lot of this, and so many discussions have been oh, we see it, you know, with the cash flow analysis and saying that, look, we have a shortfall of $9 million. Where is it going to come from? You have to plan now to make sure that things are going. It doesn't happen overnight, as we know. So anyway, I thought that was important. I don't know if any of you have any questions on that piece of it. The P&L is, you know, pretty normal of what we have going on. For the month, we have total income of $206,000. Total expenses of $247,000. Our net ordinary operating income or expense is, so in this case, is expense of $41,236 negative. And we did receive almost $76,000 in property tax receipts. So the overall net income for the month is roughly $34,000. We did see a slowdown in our fuel sales and our guest mortgage this month. So it's kind of looking like it's the peak season's over, so to speak. So now we have to get in there and figure out, you know, what can we do during this off season to bring in more revenues. And year to date, our total income is $2.2 million with total expenses of $2.27 million. Roughly, we are in line with our budget. We have a positive variance of $3,000 only. So at year to date, we have a net loss of $663,000.
Oh.
Not thousand. Sorry about that.
Thanks for making that.
That's sorry. Right?
That shocked me.
Right. And a lot of, I know. I didn't mean to scare you.
I'm glad I was sitting down.
But in the past, when a lot of these discussions were had, it didn't include the depreciation expense, which we talked about. So that's including depreciation expense, which is an operating expense. So.
How much is the depreciation?
$282,472.
For the depreciation.
That's what it would be without the depreciation expense. We would have a net gain of $282,472 net income.
Which you do, cash wise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're one of those managers. Yes, you're right. I know. Yes. I know.
Misleading.
It can be, and I could explain it that way.
What we are required by SAO, especially now, we went back to an accrual-based accounting. We're not doing cash basis. So there's certain ways they want us to report the numbers. So that's like the financial accounting, and which is accurate, and we're required to do that. There's also what you might say is managerial, which.
Right.
You know,
we're just the public. We just want to know the facts.
Yeah.
So cash keeps growing, and we're doing pretty well. Yeah.
Right, because we'll be publishing, once the audit is complete, we'll be publishing the annual reports for the last 3 years, 2019, 2020, 2021. And so you will see that. And anything, if you're looking at comparisons or peers, you want to make sure that your financials are in the same in the BARS accounting for the state. Mm-hmm. So if you don't, then you're not comparing apples to apples. And so it is important to point out that excluding depreciation, you know, we would have positive 282.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, if on the reporting from SAO, it's you do include depreciation.
So yeah.
Just a...
In the I think it's important, the reason why... appreciation is really doesn't tell us really what the threshold is. So if you, let's say you buy an asset, you buy a car in 1990, and you want to replace that car today, it's going to be substantially more money. So that's what, but the depreciation is just on the book, what the car cost in 1990 is say $10,000, and then they just straight line depreciate that over the years, over the life of that asset. But the replacement of that car might be $30,000. So what we do is we're pushing to build our reserves for and figure out a business plan for long term for how we replace these.
Yep. Right.
Yep. And we may not be here, you know, for that, but it'll help people in the future.
So may I?
Yeah.
If you really look at the depreciation along with the thing you just told us. If you adjusted the depreciation, you can call it something else, asset replacement, you know, whatever, how much would that depreciation really be to take into account the things you're going to have to do so we as the public really know where you are in the future? Right now, I have no idea.
Well, that's why we say, like, we probably need to achieve almost $1 million a year of net income in order to be able to pay. And it's got to come from someplace, whether it be from grants or someplace. But we need to try to achieve that $1 million a year threshold.
Of that, how much is depreciation for the $1 million to get where we need to go? How much would you put aside to replace the assets in real terms?
Oh, in real terms? Well,
in real life,
depreciation is about
Right. We haven't done the study to see how much the replacement will be. But we used John Wayne Marina, I believe, as kind of a guide. And it's roughly, if you include the breakwater, it's about $30 million. But we're thinking in the next 7 years?
Or maybe a little bit more. You know, we
10 years?
Yeah, 10 to, you know, maybe at least 10 to 12 years we'll have to replace the docks and the marina, especially, and some of the pilings and some of those structures. Because they're going to reach the end, close to the end of the life, or we're going to try to extend the life. Tori's working to extend the life of it, and then we're looking to reduce those costs. So we actually are pushing. We think we can actually build a better mousetrap for less money. So, but we haven't done it yet. So until I don't want to make that claim until we actually do it. But we think we can reduce the cost. But yeah, we're looking at, you know, $12 to $16 million probably replacement of the marina in about 15 years. So that's where we get the $1 million just roughly.
Just for that, I mean, and that doesn't count Washington Boulevard or anything else.
No.
It's hard to get a warm, fuzzy feeling that you guys are on stable grounds when, I mean, just look at the whole picture and it doesn't look very...
Well, it is a long-term picture. So we are on we are in much more stable ground now than where we were, and on a year-over-year basis, front-loaded right now, we're not, you know, we're doing pretty well. I mean, we have $2.5 million in the bank now, so we can weather a lot of things. If there was something to come up, we could probably weather it okay. It's just that we got to figure out with our lines of business and grant applications and anywhere we can, we got to figure a plan out. And or look at how we're going to, whether we're going to have that footprint for assets. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, we have to, and those are the things we're going to have to explore the coming year and present to the Port Commission.
Right, and those would be layered in the cash flow model that you've seen, so that we know kind of a timeline, how long would this particular asset last, when does it need to be replaced, and the cost. All of that will be layered in so we know how much, and then, yes?
When you're thinking about anticipating replacement costs for the marina down the line, are you considering maybe lowering or reducing the footprint of the marina and doing something else with your assets? If you say marinas are a losing business, are you considering reducing the size of the marina?
That would be part of the analysis, and so what we do is we're saying currently that the assumption is that we're going to replace pretty much in kind, and that's not to say that we will. That goes into your assumptions, and when you build the cash flow model, you could reduce the footprint, but we can also pursue other lines of business that would generate additional profits and revenue for the port. So there's a number of different strategies, but that is an option. That's why I said you could reduce your assets. You know, you could sell the port. You could dissolve the port. You know, that's an app, you know, but how extreme do you want to get? So far, the direction from the commission has been, we want to preserve the port, we want to grow opportunities and economic opportunities, see more investment in Kingston. So how are we going to do that? So we basically, you know, we've doubled our guest mortgage revenue. We're reestablishing the parking from pre-COVID levels. So we're doing super well in the parking, and I think it's going to continue to grow unless something really drastic happens, right, which we don't know about those shocks. The fuel, we're selling plenty of fuel and doing really pushing the fuel lines of business. We've increased profitability and revenue on fuel. And then, of course, on the permanent mortgage, we've increased rates pretty substantially. I mean, very substantially, I'd say. So anywhere that we can, we've also increased demand overall. So it isn't like it's just on a rate. We've increased demand substantially.
Right.
So then the question is, well, what do we want to do going forward? And ultimately, you know, what is going to be sustainable, and how do you model that? It's a good question. We don't have all the answers today.
Can I ask another question about going forward?
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with Appendix B, options and opportunities. Mm-hmm. I'm really disappointed. I can't tell you how disappointed I am that there's no public access to the beach and no nothing for the people of Kingston that I see here in this options and opportunities. I'm just so sad that there's no way for somebody in a wheelchair or somebody with a stroller to get to the beach, and there's so limited public beach in our, and this community is going to grow like crazy cakes, and there are going to be people who live here who want to access, and I just am so appalled. And I want to say that I went to the studies several years ago where you looked at various options, and one of them was a water park or a water feature or some sort of recreational feature for the general public, mm-hmm. for the people of Kingston, mm-hmm. and I'm not seeing it in this plan, mm-hmm. and I'm disappointed.
That was something actually that we addressed with the architects when we were talking with them just recently, is mm-hmm. that we said, asking for options for handicap to get to different areas, and yeah. how were they going to do it. It was a real big priority for the commission that we did yeah. talk to the architects about that
yeah.
for developing and how it would, and that we came up with, I think, three different ways for them to get to areas.
So where does
handicapped.
That show here in the
so plan? What it shows is that if we look at, it doesn't actually narrow it down, it's probably in a bigger feature.
It's not intended for that. The options and opportunities is specifically so that you can pursue any developmental opportunities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't preclude anything in terms of, in fact, just the opposite. It's,
right.
It gets baked into the cake. So for example, on the, which hasn't been rolled out, so I don't want to really just start talking about stuff until the commission,
right.
you know, gives me direction,
yeah.
but
yeah.
All those things are actually improved upon substantially. The middle restroom replacement would now have ADA access and much greater access to the public, and actually increases capacity for the public, for example.
Yeah, but my concern is,
it's not going to list there because that goes to the zoning and for what we can apply for,
yeah.
uh-huh. Just for development. Not, but I understand what you're saying.
I'm looking for,
yeah.
you know, I went to the hearings and there was a proposal for some sort of water park or some sort of water feature, and the consultants who were conducting the hearing stacked it so that was so totally outrageous and such a monumental project that it was rejected out of hand. Do you guys remember
what,
that?
What hearing was
that's
it?
What I'm,
was it the county?
When?
No, it was 3 or 4, 5 years ago.
I've been a commissioner for 5 years, and the commission, we haven't.
It was a port commission hearing. You have to trust me on this. And there were consultants, and the issue of public
maybe something
access.
About 7 years ago.
Okay, maybe
something.
7 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
There
okay.
was. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And so yeah. I just please.
At that point in time, those consultants, and this was about 7 years ago, was held across the hall.
Exactly.
And the discussion. Came up with the Hill property and the
uh-huh.
Hope property
okay.
as a potential one, and I don't know where that is right now, but that's the only place you really have easy access.
Right.
And you're going through your dredging calculations and everything. Are you going to dredge that out? Is that part of your capital plan along with Washington Boulevard and everything to gain the public access? We don't have it, but I'm lucky to do it. But the public does not, and mm-hmm. we tried our damnedest to buy property across the street and just down the street to let the public into the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm selfish that way because if I can get the public more access, then more people care about the cove, and
mm-hmm.
I deeply care about the health of the cove.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where your priorities are, but the Toth and the Hill property, as soon as you get rid of that dock, and I'm going to I didn't see that in your capital budget, because I get parts of that all the time. I don't know if you want those returned or not. But I'd like to see more emphasis on what you can do with the two properties you now have, which you paid $1 million for, and that was, what, 7 years ago?
Yeah, that was
That's why we proposed a rezone.
Yes.
Because with the current zoning that's there now, you cannot do a public type of facility
in
the use code.
The public may think public access through those two properties is more important than the tin pan at Washington Boulevard.
Precisely.
Have a good way to tell you what they do. I mean, look at the public. It's all for us, okay?
Yeah.
Well, like some of you live in the unincorporated area, too.
Yeah, but this has been discussed, too, so.
I know, but we're still.
Yeah.
Well, it's a work in progress, but you haven't seen the architectural drawings, but it's extensive work in order to create public access, both going from the transportation hub, from the ferries, through town, and there's multiple ways, and trying to address the gradients and the changes so that it is ADA access, it has switchbacks going back, it has going up.
Mm-hmm. And to the beach, that's the access we're talking to. Mm-hmm.
So the beach access, now you're rolling into the planning and the programmatic of looking at the marina, because you can't just go in and take out seawalls and this kind of thing. But that goes into the planning that we need to do for alternatives for including the development of the Topham Hill property. So we don't really even know what we can do with the Topham Hill until the county decides whether or not they're going to accept the rezone. Because you either go this direction or you're going to go that direction. It isn't going to be this. Once they make that decision, which we've applied for the rezone, if they make the decision, then that is going to inform mm-hmm. the commission what your options are. You know, you don't even have options right now.
No.
Yeah.
But
correct.
Until then, there's no public access using. Is the Toth property now open to
no.
the public?
It's we're waiting for the permit from the county to be able to take action on that property.
Mm-hmm.
And that permit, which permit is
that? A danger tree permit.
It's a danger tree permit.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
One of them just fell. There's just this last a few
yeah.
months ago
yeah.
because
yeah.
they were identified by the staff that there were some dangerous trees on that property.
And
I think there's been two that have fallen so far.
Yeah.
This season since the wind started
yeah.
blowing again.
And so the risk to letting people go in there and have the potential for it falling on someone or a child is just not something that we want to take on until we.
We've applied for the permit quite a while ago, but
yeah,
they're getting around to it. I don't want to put anybody on the spot.
The other day,
I just checked it again, and it's an environmental review is all it says.
Yeah,
penny.
But the discussion is taking place about trying to create public access in a sense that circumnavigates. How do you do that? Also over to North Beach, and how do you improve that through the, especially given SR 104, and if they change that alignment, not that it's. So it's something the architects are looking at, how you connect all these things exactly.
But there will definitely be elements of connectivity.
Oh yeah,
and safe connectivity
but,
for
but
sure.
Where's the planning for public recreation? You know, some sort of something that a park or something that the people of Kingston can use and enjoy.
It will be cooked into this architectural.
But where does that
design.
Appear on this?
It's in hotel motel. It's in resort.
Hotel,
it's in
none of that
parking garage.
To the public
it's
of
in
Kingston. I'm
but,
sorry.
But all these things, Mary, have elements where we are required to provide ADA accessibility. So
but,
and
but
public
I want,
and
public. I'm sorry.
You
I want
a line that says
I
public.
I want a line that says this is for the people of Kingston. This is not. For, and I realize your economic responsibilities and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but let's just have something for the people of Kingston where they can enjoy the waterfront, please. And not to enjoy the waterfront while there's a wedding reception going on behind or while people are glamping behind.
Uh-huh.
Let's not have the people of Kingston be a secondary.
Yeah.
part of the board.
Yeah.
Okay? Can we be primary, please?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to see it in your planning. Thank you for indulging me.
It's not indulgence. You don't know what that contributes to bring that up.
Well, except for I've been bringing it up for 15 years now, and I'm not getting anywhere, and I'm getting older. So, there you go.
Just a question, but does not the people of Kingston have access to the beach down by the slough? Mm-hmm. And that public park?
That's the Arness Park. And,
that's
Arness,
yeah.
Do you drive by
we
there,
have,
you see
Salt
the
Air Beach.
Park there?
You know, the stairs down Salt Air, that's all port property. The stairway that goes down
north
there.
Of the
north
ferry terminal.
Of the ferry, yeah.
But it's pretty invisible.
Well, and you talk about liability. I don't know if you want people accessing the muck in front of those two properties. I mean, you'll go up to here.
Right, but the idea of an ADA accessible and safe trail with a view platform and things like that out in front, you know, those are things where there's required public enjoyment for every single shoreline permit. And so at this point, we can't do any development there because it's zoned for residential use. And so that's why we're doing it step by step with getting the property rezoned, and then eventually then these will be components of how the port property will be all redeveloped.
Did, when it was purchased, that property, when it was purchased years ago, did the commission at that time ever apply for a rezone? Do we know? They did not.
No.
So there was no way for them to do anything that was in there, what they said they wanted to do, unless, mm-hmm. because a rezone would have to
happen.
And the same holds, you know, it just is what it is. But
it's
the same holds for the parking lot. The parking lot is technically zoned residential for the whole upper parking lot.
The upper parking.
So,
but it's parking is something you can do there.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And that's the thing. There are some things we could do on the property, but it does limit it. And so if you're going to do development or look at the options, so the option could be, there's all sorts of options.
It limits our options as it is now.
Exactly.
Zone. Right. Which is why we're doing the rezone, trying to do the rezone.
And looking at alternatives too. So
right.
It isn't, but it, you know, the public access is in the RC, that is the purpose, part of the purposes for the port's
yes.
authorities. That is by state law. That's one of the purposes. So understand that it needs to be explicit, and you want to see it explicitly.
I want to see access
so we
and
could,
use.
We could do that. You know, I mean, that's it. It's, I assume it's baked into the cake, everything that we do.
Right, well, that's what we assume, but yet if a member of the public is telling us that they want to actually see that, it would probably be a good idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to see a fountain, I want to see a wading pool, you know, I want to see stuff for people.
Yeah, it's understood.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Can we leave off here on the, totally. We are,
Public comment
time. Did anyone have anything specific for the commission they want to comment about or?
I have one more question.
Okay.
And that has to do with mortgage rates and arena fees. Is there any sort of system of preference for local people? Is that allowed under state law and is it in practice?
Because
like if you live in the port district, you get a break on.
No, we can't. Our port was, we took federal money. Actually, we didn't, but when it was first done. And so it's illegal for us to show preferential treatment to local people, unfortunately. But that's just the way it is. We're not allowed to.
Yeah, we pushed on that real hard.
And
Port of Edmonds tried to do it. Mm-hmm. They got sued and they lost.
Yeah.
So it's not to say that you couldn't try to do it and get away with it and see if somebody sues you, but it's not worth it.
We actually talked to the attorney about that just recently.
Just recently, yeah.
Yeah, we were bringing it up again in a different way. And
he knew what we meant.
Because we asked about the wait list, if we could show preferential treatment just on the wait list, and he said that's still, you know, showing preferential treatment, and it's illegal.
We tried a bunch of different options.
Yeah. That's good.
But the good news is that since I became a commissioner, that it has changed in the last 5 years, that from there being approximately 30%, was it 30 or 25? 25 to 30% were local people to,
well, so 44% are the Kingston zip code only.
Yeah.
However, having said that, of course, there was one person with the Kingston zip code that's not in the Port District.
Right.
So, and is in the Port of Eglon. So I give up. You know, I'm not going to track every household.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the reality is, we went through, and actually Mary looked at it herself, and she said, okay, let's look at everybody who's a customer, and a mortgage customer. And it was like close to 3/4 of all the customers were in the greater, what you might refer to as Greater Kingston,
Greater
Hansville,
Kingston, yeah.
Indianola, not and, really Paulsville, but
yeah.
between Kingston and Suquamish as well. There's a few folks in there
North
too.
North Kitsap.
But the people that are the mortgage customers are actually as a percentage have grown significantly in the marina.
Just
could you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, Tony Hitchman.
Yeah,
Anthony
Tony
Hitchman.
Hitcher, okay. I don't know.
On the phone all the time.
Right.
He's got the phone.
All of a sudden he has a face, yeah.
Yes.
Last meeting that was mentioned that the ferry system pays you rent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How much? And what are the terms to increase it? And does the port own the ferry dock and the fast ferry dock and the dredgings that built the marina originally,
mm-hmm.
that's now the ferry holding area?
Mm-hmm.
Does the port own all that?
No, it's divided up. The land side, the port owns 5.2 acres that the ferry leases from us. They have a 13 years remaining on their lease. They pay us about 200 little grand a year in terms of rent. The port went through a whole thing with the ferry and argued about what was fair rent. So they got 3 appraisers to come up with a number, and kind of the state comes up with 2 of the 3 is how that works. So you don't really win those ones. Do they own the property? So they own a portion of the submerged lands. We own some of the submerged lands. There's a diagram that shows this exactly. It's kind of what the breakup. Then there's submerged lands which they own, which we manage on their behalf. Do we own the fishing pier? Yes, we own the fishing pier. We have a very long-term agreement with Kitsap Transit, they have kind of a preferential. It's kind of broken up. There's a preferential area. But we own like the barge, for example, and the fishing pier. So we've looked at that. They're in pretty good, they're actually pretty good shape. They last a long time, but they're in pretty good shape. We've consolidated our asset list. We still have 3 of them. We have 1 asset list for everything now. So we're putting together life cycle plans for all assets, including those. Is there a change? So if Kitsap Transit, where we make money, is if Kitsap Transit is super consistent and really have continuity of operations, provide good service, then we make money really through parking. That's the only thing. Same with the State Ferry. We make money through that lease, but we might make a little bit of upside on the
parking. Or if they choose to buy fuel.
And if they were to buy fuel from us, which they're not required to, it was a discussion, and they did originally buy some fuel from us, but they buy at the same price we buy from, same contract. And they don't want to pay extra. So that's basically where that sits.
So when they originally built the marina,
mm-hmm.
the fill or the dredgings
is the park.
Created the ferry parking lot and the park and
yep.
everything.
That's and, right.
But the ferry owns part of that.
They own that, and they have state. So they won't usually, like, they lease that property. We're only 1 of 2 leases of any state ferry terminal. And then they own, but, you know, the state owns all of the tidelands, basically, except for unless you, yeah, you know the deal. You're an owner. So, So, yeah, so it's a, you know, but, you know, I'll have to say I've had some more discussions with the state ferry that, you know, I'm sympathetic to what they're going through, because they're having both mechanical and asset, you know, hard asset problems, and then we have some challenges from staffing. But they've been very, very cooperative on trying to work through some stuff with us. And
finally, why is the boat back? It left, and then...
The Hayek? I'll have to ask them.
Yeah. Is that the one that's been dilapidated, like, is really dirty?
Rusting in place, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they have limited parking spaces for... Usually the older boats are over at Bainbridge. They have a place to park them, so I think that they're out of space.
Huh. Yeah, they're doing a lot of repair and maintenance on those boats, trying to get it going.
That one
won't
never go again, though, right?
No, but they get rid of the dead stuff, move it over where it's just sitting there, it's not going to do anything, and then they're repairing it. Their repair and maintenance shop is on Bainbridge at Winslow. Oh.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'd have them sit there, but if they have too many boats that we're working on, then they have to ship some of it out of the ways they get to it. So yeah, but I think, you know, I think that there's definitely opportunity. I'm actually pretty, I'm always pretty optimistic, but I'm pretty bullish in terms of being able to increase our profitability and our revenue and improve our value and our service to the community too. It's not either or. I think, you know, I came out of a school where I was, Pat Davis was, I think, one of the best commissioners at any port, and she always said you have to do well to do good, and you do, you know, you got to be able to do both. But that's one thing where we do have to somehow either, or else we could shrink the footprint, you know, we could just reduce the port, but it's pretty hard to shrink these assets to say there's something to surplus, really. The only thing would that would even remotely come to mind, we'd have so many entanglements with what we have. So unless somebody statutorily condemned our property, that would be, which would be bad. The only property would maybe be Toffin Hill, but we're trying to put that into the public interest to get it increase the use of those assets for the good of the public.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why they originally purchased those properties.
Yeah.
No, my question was just...
Yeah, yeah.
To enhance revenue more than anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I think from a marketability to the public standpoint, you should make that clear that the ferry system pays your revenue.
Yeah.
In your P&L, maybe a line item, something like that.
And that actually is in the balance sheet now, the SAO. Every lease has to be shown in your balance sheet as a line item. So it's going to make the balance sheets pretty cumbersome for people that have like 100 leases or whatever. But it's in there, and we do keep it in more detail. So I can send you a detail too, and so you can see where it shows up. And we get CPI adjustments through that, which this year might be okay, you know. But it's kind of the way it's written. There's a little bit of a lag on the CPI with the way their lease is written. Yeah.
Thank you.
Really good question. Thanks. Mm-hmm. And I think, Lynn, did you have something for us? Or? Okay,
yes,
you're all right.
Yes,
okay, very good. Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right, so we have commissioner reports, item 10.
I don't have a commissioner report this month.
The only thing I wanted to talk about was Rob Gilder was at KCAC, and I actually left my notes at home. But the one thing that I could remember off the top of my head was that he was talking about the staffing issues in Kitsap County. And he said they have 115 vacancies for staff at Kitsap County. And that I'm trying to remember whether it was 40%, maybe Steve can remember whether it was 40% of their staff is eligible for retirement.
That was the sheriff's office.
Sheriff's office, okay.
Component, yeah. So 40% were either over the
50.
Age that they could retire within 5 years. And the rest were vacancies.
Right.
That they couldn't fill.
But that wasn't just the sheriff's office that had the vacancies. That was all
countywide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 115.
Yeah.
If anybody wants a job,
Go try St. Michael's Emergency Room.
No, no kidding.
Yeah.
But I wish they would have brought my notes with. But it was really interesting.
It was interesting. Yeah.
It was. So that's my report.
Well, I've been busy with other subcommittee type of meetings, in relation to the Kingston Citizen Advisory, Kingston Community Advisory Council. They have certain offsets that have been assigned responsibilities for reviewing the 2024 comprehensive plan with the county. So I've been on two separate committees now going over goals, policies, and objectives. And so there'll be more happening here probably at the beginning of next year. Those things will be framed, and the effort is to create a comprehensive plan and a Kingston sub-area plan that is more specific and less kind of cookie cutter as we had described it in our meetings, where they detuned something that was actually a really good working document to being more about policies and not so much about the goals and the specifics for the Kingston sub-area. So I'm very encouraged with all of the activities that KCAC is doing in relation to that. I'm our appointed KCAC connection.
For
the port, right. Yeah, that's all I have. Do we have staff reports now at this point? Item 11.
Tori, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. Hi, thanks for coming. It's nice to have public input. Tori Grant, the maintenance manager for, I don't think you know that. So, let's see. Recently, we finished filled up the undermined area by Delta Dock or D Dock on the seawall, which was just as it begins to erode, you can't stop it until you just get in and stop it. So we got in and stopped it. Hydraulic spray foam and lots of rock, and we got it done. So that whole undermined area by the top of the ramp pad at Delta Dock is filled and holding. And,
excellent.
Yeah, it was a fun project once we got it underway. A little bit of farmer engineering, but we got it done. Training for the staff's going good. HAZWOPR training and equipment training coming up to the end of the year is on schedule. So that's good. We're checking boxes off there. Annual storm drain catch basins got cleaned out last week. So, that was perfect timing and needed it. So that was good to have Pro back in again. They're going to probably do another assessment in 6 months just to see where we're at after winter, because you know we're at the bottom of the hill. We take on a lot of storm water, which means a lot of debris. So we can get all the heavy stuff out of the catch basins. And I might move that to 6 months instead of an annual thing, but we'll see. That they're going to come in. We'll go through it together. Let's see, winter preparations are well underway. We just put new fittings in all the water lines on the docks so we can actually shut the water off at the head of the dock, open the fittings, drain the water out of the fresh water supply on each dock during freezing conditions instead of letting the water run so it doesn't freeze. So we're just going to shut those off for those days that we know it's going to be below freezing so we don't freeze or break pipes and save an enormous amount of water by just shutting them down and draining them. Let's see, with all that, we're really hands deep and knee deep in Christmas lights. We've had some great weather. We've only had two real windy weather days where it was difficult to do lights, but it's well underway, and I think we're, you know, into the next phase of getting the big stuff out. But Ray will be back Friday, so we'll sit down and have a good discussion on where we're at, what's done. That and planning, you know, a couple big projects for first quarter of 2023 already. So making sure we got enough stuff on hand, and good to do a few things on the guest dock while we don't have a lot of traffic down there. So we'll have to isolate half of it at a time to fix a bunch of broken concrete. We put too many band-aids on it, it just needs to be taken out and re-poured. So it's a lengthy process. That and just normal maintenance every day. So
the tree lighting is scheduled for December 4th, right?
3rd.
December 3rd.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Yep. December 3rd.
Yeah, and everything's on track.
Okay.
Yeah, real good.
I love that.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Thank you, Tori.
You're welcome.
I really don't have anything else.
Okay.
Chris?
I don't have anything to share with him.
I think the only thing, so we are meeting with the fire department tomorrow and discuss about fire suppression. I think that'll be a good discussion. We're going to follow up with Port of Friday Harbor, getting the design done for those, completed for the floats replacement. I think that really holds a lot of promise. And I sat in on the review board. I'm on the review board for the technical committee for all the boating facilities program grants. So there's 28 of them statewide. And interesting, San Juan County is doing a float replacement using Port of Friday Harbor. So, which makes sense down the road. Todd, the executive director at Port of Friday Harbor, talked about that. Mm-hmm. I think that holds an awful lot of promise to have a really fantastic product at a very competitive cost. So we have the ILA in place, and I want to thank the commissioners for putting that, for passing that, putting that in place so that we can pave the way for that opportunity. And on the middle bathroom, Tori and Mark Horton, our contractor port engineer, we did a walkthrough on the power supply over there. So the power supply that serves the whole marine and the whole port is right next to the bathroom right there. So we talked about putting a vault in maybe below ground or segregating that, and then we'll replace that bathroom. And we're looking at moving that bathroom from where it is, because under the current concept from the architects, they would expand the park by another 30% plus. And that would put that bathroom in the wrong place when the park expands. So we would move it over into the right along the walkway there, which would be almost more central for people that go along the boardwalk as that expands. And also it's more accessible then for if there's events and there's things in the park that we mm-hmm. hold, including the public market, for example. Mm-hmm. So
that's good.
That is under, we're moving forward on the design build with Wenslow Architects on that project. That's about it.
I do have a comment. I wanted to thank staff, Greg and Tori, for following up with Ed Strickland's concerns at our last meeting. And I noticed that Ray probably has some input to put in.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to a follow-up, mm-hmm. one more additional follow-up in reference to what Ray has to say in regards to all that and what his follow-up is for it.
Yeah, so there was concern from, Ed Strickland, who lives in the Cove here, about compliance and enforcement of all of our rules and regulations, right? And we have a lot of them, but we do really try to enforce them, and we try to be consistent. I think that's the most important thing, but you also got to be a little bit, try to be reasonable. So for example, we did a complete audit of everything, just to get a snapshot of what it looked like. And there was there's four boats that don't have their sticker on the boat out of the 252 currently. I actually did audit a couple of docks just myself just to see. I did find a boat. But then I got tired of walking the docks. I had to get back to work and do some other stuff. And then I looked at the insurance, and I asked Ashley and Rose, customer service, and they are in the process, and they bird dog these things pretty thoroughly. It's usually what happens is when it's really busy during the summer, they don't have time. They're usually focusing on the customer service component of it. And some of these things, they expire as they go, right? So then they're bird dogging them. And of course, people, they got to bring down. So The stickers, part of our compliance for registration is also see the paper, a copy of the actual registration.
Right, yeah.
So some of those are definitely more than four, but the stickers are only, there's only slack sticking on four. The insurance, there's a number of people, but they're not, there's not, there's only maybe a handful of people that actually are really probably way in arrears, but you want a current on insurance.
Yeah, right.
Right? At, you have to have the documentation that, that they're current. So anyway, they're pursuing that. And then as far as the washdown, Tori and I, we went through that. We just, I didn't understand. There was a pretty significant vault underneath.
I didn't know that either.
You're right. So it holds an awful lot of the runoff that comes goes into that from, you know, we do, the Department of Ecology wants you to rinse off your boat with fresh water and do some of these things. Having said that, yeah, it is a possibility. We, you know, one, that might, that's a cost of using that water, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't recover those utilities, we have to track it. We don't have a necessarily a separated meter. Mm-hmm. So there's things we can do to probably improve the performance of that. We could decide at some point if we just say, well, we don't want to have a washdown. We discussed, were there really people that we feel are really violating the, not only the spirit, but you know, the law itself. Mm-hmm. We really don't feel there's a, it's anything really egregious. Does somebody sometimes take something and rub their boat down to clean the spot or whatever? Yes, they probably could do that, but we really don't see it being really super, super bad. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of marched through all of these different issues in terms of compliance. We have five liveaboards. Three of them are locked out of their heads. They don't can't use them. They're totally closed down. So there's really two potential boats that could be pumping at night, pumping into the marina. The guest moorage, we keep a log, and they, and we there's a cart that they can wheel it down in order to pump them off.
Oh,
they seem like we're, you know, the staff are really on the guest moorage pretty aggressively. So the two liveaboards, we have to talk to them and make sure that, hey, we need to see you pump off. But they go, but they take the boat to other marinas and they say, well, I took the boat out and I pumped off at the other place. I'm not pumping off here. So we think that it's probably, overall, it's probably, we're pretty good in terms of compliance, actually. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to risk our clean marina certification or anything
else, too. Definitely not.
So, but does everybody need to be? It's a pretty good.
It was great how prompt you guys were in following up and in getting back to us, and I really appreciated that. Yeah.
And we'll Ray can report out on that pretty consistently. It's pretty standard for a Harbor Master to report out on that. And, you know, it gets a little granular, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Very cool.
Yeah. Excellent.
And thanks to Ed, because you know what? It's okay, you know, to keep us accountable.
To ask him.
It's okay to complain.
Yeah. Bring forth ideas.
It's all good.
If you don't, we don't know.
I've been going to port meetings longer than any of you. I just want to say, and I've got some history that you don't know.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you attended our meeting.
Thank you.
All righty. If there isn't anything else for the good of the order, I think I'll announce our next regular meeting. And as you know, we alternate. So the next regular meeting will be Wednesday, December 14th, earlier due to the holiday. And it's at 6:30. It's a hybrid meeting, so there's a video possibility as well, and it will be right here in this room, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So, I second that motion.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank
Very
you.
Good.
I do want to comment that we were meeting at the yacht club, but it's now all here.
Yeah.
So that's the same day as KCAC, just FYI. I just figured
same
that out.
Yeah,
same
they, they're just having a working meeting.
Yes, they
at,
are.
So.
And did what? When did the holiday party get decided on? Is it the 21st or 22nd?
I thought it was Thursday. Right.
It's 22nd. Okay, I'm going to put it on my calendar. Then.
Yes.
Is it still the same time?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you all.
Thank you
very
much.
Much.
Appreciate it.
So we have a meeting.
14.
You can keep that if you want to.
Oh,
on these 2 days.
I am not sure about those cadets.
See you, Tony.
I wouldn't think.
Thanks for attending, Lynn.
Oh, I've got to.
I'll have one.